Gene, get off my... Indicate their presence by voting. Please lock the roll. And tally the board.
25 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Our invocation today is going to be given by Judy Miner, the Christian Science Practitioner. Will the members please rise for the invocation?
We read in James, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning." Dear Heavenly Father, we joyfully stand before you this morning and give gratitude in advance for the harmony you bestow as the source of all good. The work here today will be effective as we allow your light to shine into every corner and reveal any variableness or shadow of turning that might compromise these activities. We humbly acknowledge our purpose here as those bearing witness to the light and thereby remove any shadow that would try to identify us as mere mortals, sometimes at variance. We are one with you, Father, and one with each other, as the light rays are one seamless mantle emanating from the sun. We ask you to guide, guard, and govern every thought, word, and action this day, and lift them above self-interest or misinterpretation. When love speaks and love listens, there are no barriers to progress. We thank you, Father, for the omnipresent love that is here meeting every human need. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Judy. Representative Cowdery, would you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the record.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread across the journal. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the record also reflect that Representatives Williams, James, Vesey, Green, Dyson, Jewell, and Hudson have previously been excused from the call of the House today as they are in the main in Whitehorse.
Those members will all be shown as excused. The clerk, please certify the journal for the previous legislative day.
I certify the correctness of the journal for the 61st, 62nd, and 63rd legislative days.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the House journals, as certified by the Chief Clerk, be approved.
Without objection, the House journals are approved. Do we have guests today for introduction? Representative Davies.
Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, today my cup runneth over. Madam Speaker, in the Taylor Gallery from Fairbanks, we have Chris Rogers. He's a junior at Lathrop High School. And Tracy Rogers is in the sixth grade at Weller Elementary School. And with Chris and Tracy is their mother, Sherry Madro, and their father, former Representative Brian Rogers.
Representative Rogers, as a former member of this body, it gives us great pleasure to offer you the floor.
Well, thank you. I see you have plenty of business on your calendar today, but my son did want to ask me to thank you for passage of civil liability for skateboarding on Friday.
Great. Thank you very much. Representative Davies?
Madam Speaker, and in the Paratrovich Gallery, you may have noted that there's a certain lightness to my step these days, and that's because my wife is down from Fairbanks. She's a teacher up in Fairbanks. It's the spring break. I'd like you to help me welcome Linda Schanelmeyer.
Further guests for introduction? Brings us down the calendar to messages. Representative, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My wife is not in town, and that's probably why it's hard for me to get back up. I have a constituent in the Paratrovich Gallery, a constituent that I, at first available break, I'm going to go back and meet, but his name is Tara Graber. Please help me welcome him.
Further guests? Brings us down to messages. Do we have messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor, Madam Speaker.
Messages from the other body?
There are no messages from the other body.
Communications?
There are no communications.
Reports of standing committees?
House Joint Resolution Number, or the State Affairs Committee considered House Joint Resolution Number 25, Constitutional Amendment, Permanent Fund Income, dividend, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 25, State Affairs, with the new title, attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass James, Hodgins, and Dyson. No recommendation, Elton, Berkowitz, Beasy, and Ivan. The report was signed by James, Chairman. House Joint Resolution 25 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Finance Committee has considered sponsor substitute for House Bill 58, Civil Actions and Attorney Provided by Insurance Company, recommending it be replaced with Committee Substitute for Sponsor Substitute for House Bill 58, Finance, with a new title, attaches two fiscal notes, recommending do pass Mulder, Martin, Coring, Foster. No recommendation, Moses, amend Kelly, Terrio, Davies, Grusendorf, and Davis. The report was signed by Terrio, co-chair. Sponsor substitute for House Bill 58 is on today's calendar. The State Affairs Committee has considered House Bill 153, Aliens and Assistance Programs, recommending do pass James, Elton, Berkowitz, and Dyson. No recommendation, Hodgins and Beasy. The report was signed by James, chair. House Bill 153 has a further referral to the HES Committee. I have no further reports to standing committees, Madam Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Citations or resolutions for introduction?
Citation honoring Stephen Jimmerfield, Trooper of the Year, by Senator Taylor and Representative Grusendorf, honoring Karen Ann Madal by Senator Ward. House Joint Resolution Number 30 by the House Judiciary Committee, relating to the creation of a new United States Court of Appeals for the 12th Circuit.
I'll be referred to the Judiciary Committee.
I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Do we have bills today for introduction?
There are no bills for introduction, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Yeah,
House stand at ease. Here. We are down to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 13 by Representatives Osterman, Ivan, Grusendorf, and Dyson, entitled An Act Relating to Marine Safety Training and Education Programs. The State Affairs Committee considered the bill, attached a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note, recommending do pass James, Elton, Berkowitz, Dyson, Beasy, Ivan, and Hodgins. The report was signed by James, chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 13, Finance, with the same title, attached to zero fiscal note, recommending do pass Coring, Davies, and Foster. No recommendation, Terrio, Hanley, Martin, and Davis. The report was signed by Terrio and Hanley, co-chairs. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute for HB 13 be considered adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader? Representative Terrio?
Can I just move a verbal amendment to the bill?
What is your amendment, Representative Terrio?
It's pretty easy to understand. In talking to a number of the members here during the last break, on page 1, line 9, where it says Fisherman's Fund for Grants 4, we would delete grants and insert a grant.
Would you give the Representative Terrio, people are having a hard time hearing you.
Okay.
Would you put up your mic and would you give the references again, please?
There's a problem with his mic. I'll hold it. On line 9, where it says for grants, we would delete the word grants and insert a grant. So it would read for a grant for marine safety.
The proposal as amendment number 1 is to delete the words grants and reinstitute the words a grant. Representative Terrio, would you move that amendment?
I would move the amendment, Madam Speaker.
Is there objection?
Yes, Madam Speaker. I object because rules provide that must be on the clerk's desk in writing.
Well, that's pretty much just a technical amendment and is small enough that we could let it go. Is there objection to the amendment? Is there objection? There is objection. Is there debate? Representative Terrio?
Madam Speaker, the concern that was expressed at the break was that the amount of money with the wording, it would seem like we would be directing that there be many grants out of the pot of money. There is some concern that if you divide the money up too much or too many different ways, the overall impact on the educational safety training that we hope to achieve perhaps would be lost. This really, the legislature still is the one that really controls how the money is put into the budget. We would have to put the money into the budget. However, to alleviate the concern of the money being divided up too many different ways, if we just change it so that there is to be a grant that could be a person or an entity that makes application for the funding that would coordinate the entire training program, that seemed like it would alleviate the members' concerns.
Representative Osterman.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. Yeah, I have no objections to this amendment. It actually helps the bill, in my view, helps the program in the long term.
Representative Barnes.
Well, Madam Speaker, first of all, I objected because the amendment wasn't in writing, because the rules do clearly state that any amendment will be placed in writing, technical or otherwise. I think it should be delivered to the clerk. Secondly, trying to understand what it is that they wish to do here, it sounds like to me that we're also setting up a sole source contract for these funds.
Further debate? Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would just like to echo the concerns of the prior speaker. Can we get assurances that if there were a second organization in the state that participated in marine safety programs, that they could come in and compete or compete with any other programs established to get these grants? And if they were to receive, or if there were other programs throughout the state that became eligible or wanted to participate in this program, would they not also be cut out of the process? I understand that the program that we're talking about for to a large degree deals in as it says, marine safety training, but what would the possibility be for inland waters or rivers and lakes and those types of programs that might be funded?
Further debate? Representative Elton?
Well, Madam Speaker, I think maybe the maker of the amendment can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anything in this amendment designates who gets the grant. What this amendment does is it prevents the dilution of the amount of money so that whoever gets the grant has the financial resources to accomplish the purpose of the bill.
Further debate on the amendment? Representative Terrio?
The legislature could choose to put money into the budget. A single grant, it could put many grants. It really, our discretion is not changed. However, if we put the word grants here, it seems to give an indication that we mean for it to be more than one grant, and that's not necessarily what we intend to do. If you look on the previous version of the bill, it was fairly specific that there was one entity that was requested to receive the grant. We felt uncomfortable with that up in House Finance. It took that language out, but we did not mean to make it seem like then the money would be busted up into many, many little mini grants. We still control how that funding might possibly be put into the budget in the future. And Madam Speaker, I will write out the language and submit it to the clerk.
Representative Martin.
Madam Speaker, one of the things that was brought up tonight that I liked at the idea of finance is that perhaps there would be regional differences in the techniques for the fishing population. It would also seem to be cheaper for the Bethel region and the Northwest region and the Southeast region to have their own parts of these grants rather than one group that would be centralized. I'd rather kind of leave it as it is, that allows four grants that would be regionalized rather than one grant, as it says here.
Thank Representative you. Krusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. What the amendment is attempting to do would be basically make sure that whatever organization comes in has a statewide marine safety program. And since the funding is basically sourced, it's suggested here to be the Fisherman's Fund, when other groups come in, we have to make sure that they can offer the same sort of umbrella. It was mentioned here with inland waters. That is part of the program. A lot of the general boating public is also has access to this training. What we want, basically, is a organization that has a centralized program by which they can make sure that it's the areas of concern are adequately covered. Any other group that comes in would have to probably demonstrate to the legislative body that they're able to do the same thing as the present group that's doing it. But we just wouldn't want to see it broken down into little pieces where pretty soon the water safety program would be basically ineffective, and then questions of whether or not it would be even appropriate to use it in some areas. For example, when you're using the Fisherman's Fund, there may be certain areas that really are not eligible for it, even though under the present circumstances, they are using the funds that way as appropriate to protect the public.
Further debate on Amendment Number 1? Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
23 yeas, 10 nays.
And so Amendment Number 1 passes the House. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
May I have a brief at ease, please?
Representative Davies?
May I have a brief?
I'll stand at ease. Please, when you have amendments, to get them in on a timely basis. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
Yes, Madam Speaker.
Clerk,
Amendment
please.
Number 2 by Representative Davies. It's to page 1, line 9, before Marine, insert statewide.
This is another very, very small amendment on line 9. Before the word Marine, insert the word statewide. Is there objection? Yes. Oh, we haven't moved. Did you move it?
No.
Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move the amendment.
There is objection. Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I apologize for coming at the last minute with the amendment, but it was the idea for the amendment was generated by the debate, and it was indicated in the debate that part of the rationale for the amendment number 1 was the indication that we wanted these things to be have some statewide scope. So, Madam Speaker, I think if that's the intent, we ought to make it explicitly clear, and we can do that very simply by inserting the word statewide in front of Marine so that it would read now after the other amendment for a grant for statewide marine safety training education programs, thereby assuring that this single grant now will in fact reach the whole state. Thank you.
Further debate? You ready for the question? Is objection maintained? Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 2? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
32 yeas, 1 nay.
And so Amendment Number 2 passes the House. Does the clerk have further amendments on her desk?
No, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for HB 13 finance as amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Without objection, we're in third reading. The clerk, please read the title for the third and final time.
CS for House Bill 13 finance amended by the House Finance Committee entitled An Act Relating to Marine Safety Training and Education Programs.
Representative debate, Representative Osterman.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. Yeah, I introduced this piece of legislation because I felt very strongly last year that the state of Alaska does not have its own water safety program. This is the closest that we had to it, and this was generated out of an act by the United States Congress when they instructed the United States Coast Guard to start enforcing marine safety in the state of Alaska. The discussion in reference to the Alaska Marine Safety Educational Association, AMSI, that we just had in reference to some of the amendments. I think the way the amendment has been done to the program now is that it still allows that one statewide organization to come in and actually do the program. It also allows, if there are other organizations out there that can do the same type of work, to come in and bid against it. This is as close as we've got to a marine safety program in the state of Alaska, with the many, many miles of coastline that we have, the many, many miles of inland rivers, the Yukon, the Kuskokwim, all of the major rivers that we have in the state of Alaska, that this program has shown that it does work. Last year, in 1995, there were 7,300 people that took part in the training program put on by AMC. Of those 7,300 people, 2,000 were from the commercial industry. 3,700 were children that were trained in water safety, and the remaining 1,600 were from all other walks of life in the state of Alaska. So you can see that the program is not just a commercial fisheries program. The money that we were looking for originally would have come out of the Fisherman's Fund interest earnings, and they're more than willing to put that kind of money forward for a statewide water safety program. Last year, when we voted on this thing, it passed the House quite handsomely and ended up over in the Senate the last few days, where so many of the other bills that we had passed on this side ended up. So I am asking for your vote again and move it on to the Senate. Thank you.
Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A couple of quick questions for the sponsor of the legislation before us. When we use the term marine, generally that is to delineate saltwater from fresh. My concern is whether or not by establishing a marine safety training program that it might possibly be construed that the water safety programs are for saltwater programs and saltwater initiatives. Now, I know we have had discussion that it is statewide inland waters as well as salt waters, but I would like it clarified on the record that it is the intent to include the programs in inland waters as well.
House Standees, Representative Osterman, Mr. Majority Leader. Representative Osterman.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, first off, this program has been going on since 1988, and it has since that time, or since the United States Congress told us to put together a program, has covered all of the areas of the state of Alaska, and marine has been included as far as the Yukon River and all the rest of the major rivers in the state of Alaska, including the lakes and other programs where we've had programs going on of this sort. I'd be more than happy if the state of Alaska had its own program for water safety. We don't. We haven't felt that it's responsible enough as legislators to put together a program. Drownings are the number one accident in the state of Alaska, yet we don't have a water safety program. This is as close as we can get, and I think that this is the type of program we should continue to push and let the people volunteer and put the program together. $150,000 or $200,000 for saving lives in the state of Alaska is not a whole lot of money. So I think that continuing with this kind of program in the absence of a statewide sanctioned or statewide program that's put on by the state of Alaska, this is one that we should continue with.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute for House Bill 13? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
31 yeas, 2 nays.
And so House Bill 13 has passed the House. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 58 by Representatives Porter and Caldery, entitled An Act Relating to Civil Actions Relating to Independent Counsel Provided Under an Insurance Policy Relating to Attorney Fees amending Rules 16.1, 41, 49, 58, 68, 72.1, 82, and 95, Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure, amending Rule 702, Alaska Rules of Evidence, amending Rule 511, Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure, and providing for an effective date.
With the permission of the body, I would like to move this to the bottom of the calendar so that we may take up SJR 13 before we get into the debate on this piece. Without objection, Madam Clerk, would you read the next item on today's calendar?
Senate Joint Resolution Number 13 by Senators Halford, Phillips, Taylor, and Lehman relating to RS 2477, Rights of Way. The Resources Committee referral was waived. I have no committee substitute or amendments on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that SJR 13 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Without objection, we're in third. Would the clerk please read the title for the third and final time?
Senate Joint Resolution Number 13 by Senators Halford, Phillips, Taylor, and Lehman relating to RS 2477, Rights of Way.
Debate? Ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt SJR 13? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
30 yeas, 3 nays.
And so Senate Joint Resolution Number 13 passes the House. That puts us back under House Bill 58, Madam Clerk.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 58 by Representatives Porter and Caldery, entitled An Act Relating to Civil Actions Relating to Independent Counsel Provided Under an Insurance Policy Relating to Attorney Fees, amending Rules 16.1, 41, 49, 58, 68, 72.1, 82, and 95, Alaska Rules of Civil Procedure, amending Rule 702, Alaska Rules of Evidence, amending Rule 511, Alaska Rules of Appellate Procedure, and providing for an effective date. The Judiciary Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute or sponsor substitute for House Bill 58 Judiciary with the same title, attached 3-0 fiscal notes recommending do pass, Roekberg, Porter, Green, James, Bundy, do not pass, Croft, and Berkowitz. The report was signed by Green Chair. The Finance Committee considered the bill, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for sponsor substitute for House Bill 58 Finance with the new title, attaches 2 fiscal notes recommending do pass, Mulder, Martin, Coring, and Foster, no recommendation, Moses, amend Kelly, Terrio, Davies, Grusendorf, and Davis. The report was signed by Terrio, co-chair. I have 2 committee substitutes on my desk, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute with a new title be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Without objection, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk?
Madam Speaker.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Madam Speaker, I'd like a call for an ad ease for the purpose of a minority caucus.
House Deputies, Mr. Minority Leader, Mr. Majority Leader. Order, we're going to take a brief recess. We'll be back onto the floor at 20 after 12. House stand in recess. House stand at ease.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in recess until 7 p.m.
We are in recess till 7 p.m. Yes. And will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Clerk, please tally the board.
22 members present.
We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May the record reflect that Representative Masick is excused from a call to the House this evening because of personal illness.
Representative Masick will be shown as excused. Does the clerk have amendments on her desk? $64,000 question.
Yes, Madam Speaker. Amendment number 1 by Representative Davies to page 6.
Representative Davies. Well, he was near here. Representative Davies? Amendment number 1?
brief at ease, please.
House stand at ease. Order, Representative Elton.
Madam Speaker, may we revert back up the calendar to introduction of guests?
Without objection.
Madam Speaker, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce a guest page on the floor seated to my left, Mr. Sean Hall, who was a guest page last year and is the son of Judy Hall, who is sitting in the back and is one of the people everybody's familiar with, one of the K2 Gavel to Gavel people. Please help me welcome Sean.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us back to amendments. Let's start all over again. Amendment number one, Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number one.
Objection. There is objection. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Amendment number one it addresses Section 12, which is on page 6, lines 14 through 28. And what the new language that's in here that would be added refers to a reduction in the benefit that a victim would have based on a guess of what a portion of his benefit might have been taxed by federal taxes. So it's a kind of a guess about what the amount would be what amounts might be subject to federal taxes if there were such taxes, and then having the amount reduced by that. Madam Speaker, I am aware of no other state that does this right now, so I think that this is simply a reduction in benefit that we don't need to take, and I guess the standard procedure in the court is to look backward and see what wages were received. For example, a category that would be in this that would be affected by this would be wages, and so wages that are actually in the past, where we know what the tax structure was, are in fact the taxes that would have been taken are taken into account. And generally speaking, when we go prospectively in the future, the general practice has been not to take those into account. So this is plowing new ground here. There's some notion somehow that this is some sort of windfall for the victim, Madam Speaker. I don't believe that it's in almost all cases that it's really possible to make the victim whole, that these kinds of monies have not been traditionally counted as windfalls in the past, and we shouldn't start doing that now. So I think this is a kind of a pernicious addition to our tort practices to make a change that we really haven't contemplated before and which really isn't necessary. And so it's kind of, I think this is in the category of sort of adding insult to injury, Madam Speaker, and I would hope that this body doesn't start off on this bill on this foot. So I would hope that we would support this amendment to take this requirement out. It really has very little to do with the substantive issues of tort reform. Thank you.
Before we continue on the debate this evening, I'd like to just lay out the game plan and some rules. I will invoke at this time Mason's 102. You will speak only once on an amendment, and we will stay until all the amendments are done. So the longer you talk, the longer we stay. Mr.
On that point.
What is your point?
On your rules, may I speak to your...
Representative Cabina?
Can I have a brief at ease?
House stand at ease. Clarify the minority leader's point. Always the person making the amendment will have the opportunity to do the wrap-up on the amendment. Representative Grusendorf?
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. Before I address amendment number one, being that we can only speak once, I think it's in our best interest then to call the House so all members have an opportunity to hear the discussion as to each issue.
Representative Grusendorf, are you calling the House right now?
I'm calling the House prior before I speak, yes.
There is a call on the House, Mr. Sergeant-at-Arms, if you would make sure all the members...
It's a shame they're going to miss this, but I understand that, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, of all the items in this bill that bothered me most, it was this. To me, it more or less was adding insult to injury that had occurred, especially when those that defended indicated that this was a windfall to that person. Now, if you look at the jury instructions in this state say that they should consider the taxes deduction from the present or past, but on future earnings and wages, they're instructed not to consider that. And that's for a reason, because no one can speculate what the credits and deductions are going to be of an individual. Now, in most cases, when we're talking about this compensation or economic compensation for loss of wages, many of us are thinking in terms of people who are making, $100,000, $130,000, $140,000. But, Madam Speaker, as a rule, we're talking about somebody who makes about, anywhere between $30,000 to $38,000. Now, when you start deducting taxes from that, it just isn't right in order from the future perspective, because as I indicated, the IRS can handle that. And what bothers me most is, as indicated, this is not only plowing new ground, but it's ground that should never be touched in the first place. It is basically wetlands in my mind, and I don't think this is appropriate for us to be the only state to say that future wage earnings that we're going to deduct the taxes to the benefit of the person that is being sued against the Alaskan that is actually, you know, has these injuries. So I would speak very strongly in favor of Amendment Number 1.
Mr. Majority Leader?
I'll wait
until Representative Croft?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Two issues on that and on this and all other amendments. I promise to give it no more time than this weighty issue deserves. We talk about a windfall, and the question really is, who gets this money? This is not the start of a proceeding. This is not an allegation. This is not a suggestion of wrongdoing. This is somebody who has been found to have wronged, to have punched somebody, driven drunk and harmed somebody, breached a contract. And if there's a windfall to be had, who should have it? The person who was wronged, found innocent and to have been harmed, or the person doing the wrong? It seems to me there's no choice on that. And that's my primary objection to this. But I guess secondly, Madam Speaker, one of the stated goals of this piece of legislation is to reduce frivolous lawsuits, to reduce lawsuits that don't have any productive meaning for us. And I can't think of a less productive lawsuit than the lawsuit that's going to come after every lawsuit in this state, after this, every proceeding in this state, which is the the post-judgment complicated proceeding to determine what the taxes might have been on this. We're going to literally waste hours deciding how much to give back to somebody who should have paid this in the beginning and who had no reason to harm someone. So both in terms of the time we will waste and the principle of the thing, we should support this amendment.
Further debate? Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I have three fundamental objections to this section as it now stands. The first is, if it provides a windfall, it provides a windfall to a party that's already been found culpable. Instead of having to pay what a jury determines a defendant should pay, the defendant gets to pay that amount less the tax that the plaintiff would have had to pay. That's not fair. That's an invasion of what the jury is supposed to do. The second invasion that takes place here is it invades the privacy of the plaintiff. All of a sudden, everyone's going to have to turn over their tax records. You're going to turn it over to the court? You're going to turn it over to the defendant? This kind of information is essential to protecting privacy. And finally, as the previous speaker noted, because of issues related to taxation, as soon as we get into this sort of issue, we're inviting further litigation. What was my tax rate last year? Am I in the 30% bracket? Am I in the 20% bracket? Am I running some kind of long-term tax issue? These are questions that an individual should be free to make on his or her own time, not on the anvil of the court.
Further debate? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The members supporting this amendment have hit a couple of buttons, so we might as well get perhaps several comments off the table. It never ceases to amaze me when we discuss tort reform how The people who are not interested in seeing this body of law be reformed set examples that make you feel that every defendant that is ever in a court of law in this state is Ford Motor Company, and every plaintiff's name is Becky, who makes $38,000 or less. Madam Speaker, that's not the case. Plaintiffs and defendants shake out in the same proportion of differential incomes that exist in this, any population, and in our population of the state. Consequently, I would ask members, any time that this thought creeps into their mind as we're discussing any of these amendments, don't picture the defendant as Ford Motor Company. Picture him as you, because you are as likely to be sued as anyone else. Then see if some of this stuff makes sense or not. I don't know whether this exists in any other state, and neither does anyone on this floor that I know of, or we'd be hearing that fact. I think there's a likelihood it does. It does exist in every federal court in every state in this union. The federal courts do this. It is not unique and new. What it is simply that why should someone be made whole and then whole and a half? If you read the intent of this piece of legislation, it is to provide adequate compensation to victims, but not excessive. Madam Speaker, if we are paying someone their future wages that they would have earned because they now can't because of an injury, that's what we should be paying them, not the additional money that they would have had to pay for income tax had they not been injured. We're making them whole. That's all this does. That's what the federal courts do. We're providing a standard. You don't have to bring in your tax records, just your tax rate. And it's usually an item that is negotiated before it's presented to the judge in any event. I would request members to vote no.
Representative Elton.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I wasn't going to speak to this amendment, but I would suggest, the previous speaker suggests that we think of each plaintiff as ourselves. And I mean, I think the balanced way to look at this amendment is to think of what happens if we're the plaintiff, but also to think of us, of what it might be if we're Becky. And I think that's the problem that I have with this section, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, we're suggesting that we know best what applies in a specific fact situation that hasn't even yet occurred. And I think that if we're going to think about how we vote on this amendment, that we don't just think of ourselves substituting us for Ford Motor Company. We also need to substitute where we would be if we were Becky. And we need to think about what will happen. I would be the first to acknowledge that not all plaintiffs are Ford Motor Companies and not all defendants are Beckys or vice versa. But, Madam Speaker, I do think that what we're being asked to do is we're being asked to prejudge something that hasn't even yet happened, and I would encourage everybody to vote yes on this amendment.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, the Majority Leader said that this is something that is already in all federal courts, and I did not hear, and I'm trying to think of something that I could put it to, such as the Exxon Valdez spill. Is that something where, you could, when you're talking about a loss of, or an economic loss, that this would apply in that case to the people that who received that benefit? So I've never heard that if it dealt with that case, and I'm asking the question from the Majority Leader if it does.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Exxon Valdez case, of course, was in federal court, not in state court, was not, because of its maritime law application, would not ever be in this court. Just make sure that that's done. We had testimony in finance that the federal courts have this provision, this capability of reducing a judgment by taxes that would have been paid. I don't know, without having it in front of me, what category of payments in the three categories, economic, non-economic, and punitive, how that judgment laid out. So I couldn't tell you what portions of that may or may not be taxable. What this bill provides, though, is that if it is that a plaintiff has to pay taxes on any portion of that future judgment, that, of course, those taxes would not also be deducted from the judgment. If they don't have to pay taxes on something that they would have ordinarily, had it been regular income, i.e. wages, then, and only then, would you have to, would you reduce the judgment by the amount of those taxes that they would have paid.
Further debate? House stand briefly at ease. Representative Bryce?
Thank you. From somebody in the body who might possibly know. During the break, I'd asked a couple of folks about the ability to, or the federal ability to tax some of these judgments, and it was sort of half and half possibly. And in those cases where, Madam Speaker, where these judgments may be taxed anyway, I think by withdrawing the taxes or lowering the judgment by the amount of taxes paying, what we're doing is we're hitting the person twice on his taxes. And I think if we can have that point cleared up, Madam Speaker, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Page 6, line 27 and 28, this paragraph does not apply to an award of damages if those damages are taxable under state or federal law.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question being? Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, we've heard that we should not think of these things as Becky versus Ford Motor Company. And I would, from the point of view that, you know, I would certainly acknowledge that is an unusual circumstance, that those kinds of cases come rarely. But Madam Speaker, I think what we should consider is the fact that the vast majority of civil cases are, you know, one small business versus another small business, or one small business versus a larger business. Secondly, Madam Speaker, I think that while we shouldn't necessarily think of this as the poorest individual versus the richest corporation, I think it is incumbent upon us to think about how these kinds of changes in law will affect a relatively a person who is not very well off. Because, Madam Speaker, I think one of the overriding concerns that we have about this portion of this bill and other portions is the way it will affect a person who doesn't have a lot of money. And I think in this particular case, it has the potential to reduce significantly an award to a person that has relatively small means. And I think one of the things that we need that we generally try to do in our laws to protect the effect of our laws against the least among us. So, Madam Speaker, I think while we certainly don't want to characterize the effect of this solely in those terms, it certainly is a very important consideration how it might affect somebody. I think one of the problems with this kind of a provision is that it tends to close the door on those people who don't have a lot of money. It reduces the consideration, the possible return that a person might get, to the point where people will throw up their hands and say, not worth trying. And I certainly admit that in this case here, it isn't the biggest piece of a potential award. But depending on the allocation of how the award comes out, a large portion of the economic benefit might be, or the economic costs might have been wages, and so we might be reducing a fairly significant piece of that. So, Madam Speaker, I think that it is important to think in those terms. Maybe not solely, but certainly as one of the significant considerations. So I think, we should, in consideration of how it might affect somebody in those categories, that we should definitely vote yes on this amendment. Take this relatively insulting section out of the bill. Thank you.
Also, for the information of the body, And for in light of consideration of time and consideration of the members of the floor, I would request that the makers of the amendment, when they do have their time for wrap-up, that they do not use their wrap-up time to rehash their original argument, that the wrap-up time is for answering questions or points that have come up in debate throughout the debate period, not to rehash their original argument. Are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 1? Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
13 yeas, 19 nays.
And so Amendment Number 1 fails to pass the House. Clerk, please read the next amendment. Representative Grusendorf.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. My call was just on that amendment, but I hope that other people consider that so that the sponsor of an amendment doesn't have to rehash the whole thing at the end because half the people weren't here.
Could the clerk please read the next amendment on our desk?
Amendment Number 2 by Representative Croft, beginning page 5, lines 1 through 19.
Representative Croft.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move Amendment Number 2.
There is objection. Representative Croft.
Hearing objection. Madam Speaker, this amendment concerns the non-economic caps, that is, the caps on the non-economic damages that a jury in this state may award. Right now, there are three major forms of damage that can be awarded. Economic, which is basically lost wages. It can include the medical expenses or other costs incurred because of the defendant's conduct. Punitive damages will come too soon, and it's has the deterrent or punishment effect. This is basically everything else. It is, Madam Speaker, how we evaluate the worth of a person besides their wages. It is everything about them that you miss when they're gone. It is loss of consortium. It is the pain and suffering they suffered in the injury. It is all but their earning capacity. So when the majority leader asked you to visualize different members for the defendant and the plaintiff that had been suggested in other areas, for this amendment, you need to look at the people who earn very little, because that's the people that this amendment affects. How much do we value someone whose W-2 form shows very little income? Someone who's chosen to be a homemaker? Somebody that has a subsistence lifestyle, somebody whose best earning years are now behind them. This is the value that a court will place on them. Now, of course, no court, no money judgment can truly compensate for these things, for the company that you'll miss, for the pain someone endures. It can sometimes help the family, and if we had the power in the civil justice system to bring them back, or bring their mobility back, or bring their eyesight back, we would surely do that as a preferable option. But if we can do nothing else, this area is where we evaluate what somebody who earns very little is worth to us. The reason that we propose this amendment, the reason that I have, is because with this cap, combined with other provisions of the law, we are facing a situation where, for the first time, if you show me their W-2 form, I can tell you how much it costs to kill them in this state. We literally have a situation where somebody, you take their earnings, you take a cap on non-economic damages, we'll get to punitive damages later, but it makes it an accounting function. It makes a person a maximum number. The reason that that is dangerous is because it may become, Madam Speaker, an accounting function. It allows people to value a life, put it in, and see if it's worth their advertising budget. And I think particularly in a state that prides its pioneers as much as we do, that has so many alternative non-economic lifestyle earners, we need to look very closely at something that allows everything about a person to be an accountant's line item. For reference, we've talked a lot about some famous suits. I'm sure we'll talk a lot more today. But the most famous suit of this and last year was the O.J. Simpson verdict. In that one, the base judgment was $8.5 million, and that was all non-economic damage. Ron Goldman was not sending money to his parents. They had no financial stake in him continuing to live in the coarse terms of the law. His economic value to them was zero. But of course, his value to them was not zero. In this state now, his value is no more than $300,000 if this bill passes. It may come as a surprise to some people. The section has a higher cap, the section that would be eliminated by this amendment, for losing the loss of one or more limbs, for an impaired cognitive capacity. Murdering someone doesn't fall under those, though I think most Alaskans would think that when you're murdered, you do lose the loss of your limbs or a significant cognitive capability. In fact, under this bill, under this the bill that we are considering and the section that this amendment considers, murder is $300,000, no matter young or old, no matter what they meant, no matter how much time they spent with you. So in this amendment, whatever you envision in others, plaintiff or defendant, in this one, visualize your children. Like the Goldmans, it's very unlikely that any of us are having children as a money-making enterprise. In fact, while I don't have any children, I was a child once, and I know it's quite the opposite. Parents spend more on their children than they make from them. And so this bill, this amendment, directly affects what is that child worth, because they're not bringing any economic gain to you. And the answer under this bill is a flat $300,000. And I, just as flatly, Madam Speaker, don't understand that conclusion.
Further debate? Mr. Minority Leader?
Well, Madam Speaker, if what the maker of this amendment just said is accurate, I cannot in my life understand why this section is in here. Non-economic damages, and if we refer it to the O.J. Simpson case, and if that was an accurate statement, how anybody in here would want to see this section in here is beyond my comprehension. I mean, anybody's life, even mine, is worth more than $300,000, Madam Speaker. Non-economic. And if I was dealing with my child who had been killed some way by someone being negligent or wrongfully killed her, I can't understand why we would limit this. Madam Speaker, to me, this is exactly what a jury is for, to look at the circumstances. If someone who was poor and did something, you can't get $300,000, and it doesn't matter. But if someone is obviously very wealthy, it makes no sense to limit it to $300,000. Why would we take this out of the hands of a jury and limit it like this? It makes no sense, Madam Speaker.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yes, thank you, Madam Speaker. I hope that everybody thinks very carefully about what is important to them. It may not be the same as what is important to me. Money has never been that important to me. But I guess the non-economic value of what I like to do is perhaps the overriding factor of why I enjoy life. And that's one of the things here, loss of enjoyment of life. Madam Speaker, if I wasn't able to move around through the outdoors, wasn't able to see it or hear it, and on some occasions even smell it, sometimes it's sweet and sometimes it isn't, I don't think it would be worth my while to live if I was in a state where I could not see or I could not walk through what areas that I like to walk through. And I often think of a lot of people in this society, in the state of Alaska, who are oftentimes getting a paycheck at a job that they don't particularly enjoy, but in order to have the economics, in order to do what they enjoy, they have to do something that is less than what they really want to do. Madam Speaker, I'm talking about the artists, I'm talking about the musician, I'm talking about the singer, I'm talking about the poet, I'm talking about the writer. There's a lot of people that have things that they really want to do, but they can't really at this time make any money at it, but I'm sure there is potential there. So thus they are the box boy, or they're the clerk, or there's somebody in a, you know, in a business trying to get the money to put the bread on the table and take care of their family while they're really thinking about these other things that I mentioned. And that's why I feel that when we're talking about non-economic damages, injury to me, if it denied what, some of the things I enjoy doing that I don't get paid for, it would be very hard to explain what's important to me to a jury. At least they would be able to decide that. Now, some of these other things I probably could go along with non-economic damages, but when you're talking about the loss of enjoyment of life, Madam Speaker, that's extremely important. It was mentioned here about death, where a person, the value of my family, and I want you to think about all your members of your families, are certainly worth more than what the cap is here. Sometimes that's the reason that you and I are living and happy, because of our families that are there. And I don't think we'd want to see a cap like this when it came, but of course the jury would be the ones that would decide that issue. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This seems to be a section that puts pocketbook in front of pathos. I'm looking at an Alaska Judicial Council review of the cases that came through. 85% of cases that a jury decided rendered verdicts of under $100,000. So I ask the question, who benefits from this provision? It's certainly not the people of Alaska.
Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I guess the key issue here with this non-economic damages is really just how much do we trust the people of Alaska to make decisions for themselves? Because it's really asking, what we're doing is we're limiting the ability of Alaskans who are serving on a jury, Alaskans who take time out of their busy schedules to go down and perform, I think, one of the most important responsibilities in our society, our civic responsibility, which is to serve on a jury and to judge their peers. And one of the things that I've learned in my brief life is that I can't know everything, and that there are a lot of different situations out there. There's a lot of complexities out there. There's a lot of diversity out there in our society. It's one of the things that makes America great, I think, is the diversity. We have a lot of individuals out there who are engaged in entrepreneurial activities. They're engaged in trying to make something of themselves. And working, I think a lot of Americans, a lot of Alaskans are really working really hard to do something with their lives. And they place a lot of value on what they do with their lives. Their family places a lot of value on what they do. Their neighbors place a lot of value on what they do. Because, you know, people really do make the difference in Alaska. People really do make the difference in America. And how do you place the value on what a person is worth? Should politicians make that decision? Or should it be Alaskans meeting in a jury looking at the unique circumstances of a case. Well, I think I'd much rather trust the people of Alaska to make those decisions. And I think that placing this section in this bill creates a situation where a number of individuals down here in the legislature are limiting Alaskan citizens to make their decisions. And I guess I have more faith in the individual Alaska citizen to produce a careful and reasoned decision on what a person is worth, on how somebody should receive benefit for a wrong that has been done them. So, I respectfully request that the members of the body please to accept this amendment. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Elton.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I mean, it's almost somewhat repugnant to have to stand up and try to debate what the value of a person's life may or may not be in something that hasn't happened. And I guess it would be easier for me to get my arms around this section of the bill if the sponsor could just point out to the members on the floor here, you know, give us an example of what has gone wrong. Give us an example of something outrageous that has happened in our state. Give us an example of a situation in which a jury of our neighbors has made a mistake. And maybe the further challenge is, if they made a mistake, give us an example of an appeals court that hasn't rectified that mistake. Madam Speaker, a lot of this debate, to me, just doesn't seem necessary. I mean, I think that this section of the bill, not only is it repugnant trying to say that a life is worth $300,000, but it seems to me that this section of the bill and this debate that we've just had isn't even necessary. I mean, I would challenge the sponsor of this legislation to give us an example of what has gone wrong and when it has gone wrong and why it went wrong.
Further debate? Representative Davies?
Madam Speaker, most of the arguments have been made, but I'd just like to point out that I think that this proposed section of the bill, which this amendment would delete, contains within it the illustration of what's wrong with it. And that is the fact that we feel constrained to enumerate under subsection C that in certain cases we will go from $300,000 to $500,000 for a cap on these kinds of things that we're willing to enumerate here. And I won't read the particular, in interest of time, Madam Speaker, I won't read the specific things here, but Madam Speaker, it's just the logic of this I'd like you to consider. Why is it that we feel compelled to list a short list of horrendous things? What makes us think that we can imagine all the possibilities that are out there and that would cause us to go from a $300,000 valuation to a $500,000 valuation? Doesn't that give you pause to hesitate a little bit, Madam Speaker, that maybe we've left something off that list? Madam Speaker, I think it certainly gives me a great deal of pause. In fact, it gives me enough pause that I think that we should adopt this amendment because, Madam Speaker, without this section in the bill, the juries can make these decisions. With this section of the bill, we've drawn very distinct limits, and in these particular circumstances, you can do this, but in these cases over here, you can't. And Madam Speaker, I just, you know, I don't want to list, you know, try to add to a list of horrifics. I think, generally speaking, it's a pretty well-established point of philosophy when you're, you know, in political science, when you're developing statutes like this, that it's better to establish a kind of a principle than to list a specific list, because, Madam Speaker, there's always exceptions to a list.
And when you list certain things you create, when you list a specific list like this, you create loopholes, Madam Speaker. And you create other causes of action, Madam Speaker, by having these kinds of things. That it's always difficult to think of every possible circumstance ahead of time. And we will have suits for similar situated people not being treated unequally because somebody will have some horrific thing happen to them that will be clearly comparable to this list in subsection C and which we haven't foreseen. And so there will be some lawsuit based on that, Madam Speaker. Whenever you put a specific list like this, you create the possibility for arguments about other things that should have been on the list. And so, Madam Speaker, the point I'm trying to make here is that by having that subsection in there, we've admitted that to the fallaciousness of the notion that we can somehow have the foresight to understand in all circumstances what the limits ought to be. Madam Speaker, that really is the function of a jury, and we really ought not to try to take that responsibility away from them. And Madam Speaker, the practical impact, as it's been said before, but I have to underscore it, the practical impact of this is relatively small. There are very few cases that are awarded above even 100,000, let alone 300,000. But Madam Speaker, in those instances where they are and where the judge hasn't reduced them, they're probably the just thing to do. And so why should we, in those few cases, take justice away? It makes no sense to me, Madam Speaker, and so that's why I'm voting for this amendment.
Representative Rice.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Looking over this list, one major injury that comes to mind that is not addressed by this is, what about somebody who's been terribly burned? Somebody who's been horribly scarred by fire? Madam Speaker, those are not just physical marks, those are also mental marks. And while the burns might not impair a person's cognitive capacity, Madam Speaker, it definitely makes life within society very tenuous at best. Another issue that comes to my mind is dealing with a constituent case that I've been dealing with for a number of years now. And it deals with a lady that was hit by a drunk driver, a lady named Lisa Hoffaker. She's not a hemiplegic, paraplegic, or a quadriplegic. She also has her cognitive capacities. Yet, by the very fact of the injury that, through no fault of her own, she received, the economic stability of her family was terribly undermined. The cost that they will have to bear for home nurses, the cost that they'll have to bear for ongoing medical procedures is tremendous. Their alternative, Madam Speaker, is to turn to Medicaid or Medicare, basically welfare. Keeping this section within the bill, Madam Speaker, is basically doing one thing in these circumstances. It's turning people back to the state to take care of them. It takes away their ability to live safe independent lifestyles as possible after such a terrible accident. Madam Speaker, I think it would be a prudent measure on behalf of this body that if we did remove this section.
Further debate? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The area of this particular amendment is in the middle of the three types of compensation that are allowed to be requested in a tort case, and if I may have just a little latitude, as the maker of the amendment began his presentation, it is an aid to understanding to know what all three are and what they include so as to know what it is you are including or excluding with this amendment. As was mentioned, there are two types of compensatory damages. One is economic and one is non-economic. What that basically means, and I would disagree slightly with, not slightly, a lot, with the characterization of the maker of the amendment, that economic damages is only wages and maybe some medical costs, and that's all, and that everything else is non-economic. Quite the opposite, Madam Speaker. Economic damage is any articulatable, definable cost that a plaintiff, a victim, has as a result of this injury. The previous speaker mentioned the problem with an individual that he knows that's having trouble making the payments that are necessary to have home nursing and the costs of ongoing medical attention. Those are economic costs They are not in any way curtailed by this bill. If you have to readjust your house because you now are in a wheelchair, that's an economic cost. You can define how much that's going to cost. That will be provided, assuming that there is money to provide it. Non-economic costs, Madam Speaker, are the subjective areas. Pain and suffering. How much is that worth? That's a very good question. I would say that if we want to include loss of consortium, we'd better not pass this amendment, because loss of consortium is an area that we now are adding for consideration of non-economic damages that isn't in the current law. The current law, Madam Speaker, does cap economic, non-economic damages. It caps them at $500,000. But then it has an exception that you can drive a train through. It says, except in areas of severe physical injury or disfigurement. If I am in an accident and lose two knuckles off my little finger, I am disfigured. And so, by our current law, now I have unlimited capability of recovering non-economic damages. That and the same argument for punitive damages, when we get to that, is what is brought to the table in the 95% of the cases that settle rather than going to the jury. They settle, Madam Speaker. We had case after case presented in testimony and in writing of people saying that they have a small business or they are an individual and they were sued, and they were sued by someone who's asking for large amounts of non-economic and punitive damage, and that they are so concerned that they will not be able to make that payment that they will settle for a higher value than they think really they should, just so they won't face the possibility of unlimited non-economic damages or punitive. During the research and discussions of the task force on tort reform this summer, the Judicial Council sought to bring to the task force as much information as possible in this area. They were only able to get data from 1 year, and they readily admitted that they didn't get all of it. They just got what they could get in terms of records of trials. In the records for the year, I believe it was 1995, there were non-economic damage awards in one out of every five cases. That statistic is not comforting when you are sitting down facing a lawsuit that are asking for areas of these non-economic and punitive, knowing that, one, juries do award these things, and two, my exposure is unlimited, virtually, in this area. We've mentioned that the exception up to $500,000 for these serious injuries doesn't include murder. Well, quite frankly, I would think that that's obvious. The section that goes up to $500,000 is meant to compensate someone who is severely injured a little more than those people who are just claiming pain and suffering from the loss of someone else. I think that distinction should be obvious. And finally, we can't help a discussion on tort reform without bringing up OJ. There were $8 million in compensatory damages, the most of which in California somehow were non-economic damages. Unfortunately, state law existing in our state would limit that to $500,000 already. That's the law. The fact of the case is that Ron Goldman's father said after that verdict came in that the money was inconsequential. What he sought was the verdict, and he got it. With that, Madam Speaker, I think that it is good state policy to put limits on these things so that settlement costs will not be way over what they're supposed to be in 95 out of 100 cases, so that there's some predictability to anyone who's going into business or just steps out on the street, predictability, and they're knowing what their limits of liability exposure are.
and so that the costs of the system and the eventual increases in liability insurance can be controlled. Thank you very much.
House Standardese. Come back to order. Representative Croft, do you have a wrap-up?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. One or two points that were raised. The specter of unlimited liability was raised, and then the comfort that under current law, Ron Goldman would be capped at $500,000 in non-economic damages. It's difficult to be scared and reassured at the same time. There is a cap under current law. It's $500,000, and for severe physical injury, that cap is excused, rightly so. It says for the normal run-of-the-mill events, we're not going to allow wild pain and suffering claims. But for severe physical injury, we're going to allow you to estimate what happened. You to estimate, the jury to estimate how severely that person was injured and how much their life was worth. So we're in a middle situation. We've already done one step of tort reform. It wasn't enough for the insurance companies to bring down their rates, and now they're ratcheting down once more on what we can value our citizens' lives at. Briefly, Madam Speaker, as the citizens of Alaska go to bed tonight while we stay up and debate this matter, for most injuries, they're unique. The jury is going to hear about them, their relationship with the people that they will no longer see, or the facts of their injury and the life after it. And I hope that when they wake up tomorrow, they still are. But I worry that tomorrow, they're just $300,000. That when the majority leader said what we need is predictability, said it a number of times. We are not a predictable people, and we are not identical. And I don't think that we should be valued predictably. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? The question for the body is the adoption of Amendment Number 2. Members, please proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
13 yeas, 18 nays.
And so Amendment Number 2 fails to pass the House. Representative Elton?
May we go back up to introduction of guests?
Without objection.
Madam Speaker, most of us on the floor and in the gallery have to be here this evening, but I'd like the chance to introduce somebody that doesn't have to be here this evening, a constituent that I met several days ago in the Paratrovich Gallery. Could you please help me welcome Bridget Crawford?
Further guests for introduction? Clerk, please read the next amendment.
Amendment Number 3 by Representative Berkowitz, beginning page 5, line 13.
Representative Berkowitz?
I move Amendment Number 3.
There is objection. Representative Berkowitz?
Well, we're cataloging the horrors that can happen to somebody. People should contemplate the car accident that leaves someone paralyzed. That's okay under this section. Lose a limb, tough luck. Get burned, tough luck. Get poisoned, tough luck. Get shot, tough luck. Go blind, too bad. Lose your hearing, not our problem. We cannot catalog all the serious physical injury that someone can suffer. That's a jury's job. Now, I know many in this body have adamantly protected the Second Amendment right to bear arms. I hope people are as adamant when it comes time to protecting the right to have a jury, because this is a jury question. What is serious enough to merit non-economic damages? We entrust juries with this question in the criminal context on a regular basis. Serious assaults include the definition serious physical injury. There's no precise definition. There's no predictability to what that is. We trust a jury to make those decisions. Well, I trust a civil jury to determine what constitutes serious physical impairment or disfigurement enough to justify non-economic damages near the majority leader's caps. It's a jury's job. And yes, there's going to be lawyers arguing in front of a jury, hopefully eloquently for each side, but it's the jury, an Alaskan jury made up of our peers, who's going to make that decision best. And when we strip them of that right by this narrow definition of what constitutes the type of injury necessary to qualify for non-economic damages, we're saying we show no faith in them. I have a lot of faith in the Alaska jury system. I've argued in front of Alaskan juries. They're quixotic, they're difficult to understand, but they generally have strong common sense, and they know what serious physical injury is. And I think we should trust them to make that decision in the civil context as well.
Further debate? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think to make it the amendment clear that this amendment seeks to take the language that is an existing statute that allows non-economic damages to be unlimited and place that as the standard for the difference between the $300,000 and the $500,000 cap in the bill. Is that correct? So we're not leaving people, if we don't do this, with a tough situation or stripping anybody of their rights. What we're talking about is $200,000, the difference. They still have economic, non-economic damage under the bill of $300,000. So this really would be another step back towards the language that is causing the original problem of just what is disfigurement, and in this context, what is severe physical injury. That's the language we're trying to take out precisely, and for that reason, I would suggest request a no vote.
Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, Madam Speaker, this is what putting this language back in, certainly, and in the terms of the way the bill would then read, certainly leaves a lot of predictability. We are still placing an absolute ceiling of $500,000, which is our current cap for most circumstances. The language that we're adding here would, in the existing law, allow us going through that $500,000 to higher numbers. But in this case, what we're saying is we want to put that same kind of principle, general principle, in place to allow the jury to make the decision when you could go from the $300,000 to the $500,000. Madam Speaker, it seems to me that we're still maintaining a great deal of predictability in here, because there's still the absolute ceiling of $500,000 that, under the terms of this bill, if amended in this way, still could not be breached. So it really isn't going back to the situation where a jury can decide some astronomical number. We're saying that you're limited to this $500,000, and you're limited actually to $300,000 in most cases. But by allowing the jury to make the distinction across a broad spectrum of cases when you might want to go to the $500,000, it seems to be a lot more logical than to list out, as I argued before, and I won't repeat the arguments, but it's the same argument. You've got a discrete list here of a few things. It's going to be easy to find circumstances. Every member here could probably think of one that ought to be on the list that isn't. So, Madam Speaker, what we ought to do is get rid of the list and put in this language that would then allow the jury to make that decision, still within very clear limits. So that the predictability that, people who are pushing this want is still there. But it allows, does allow a little more rational application of the jury process, Madam Speaker. So for that matter, for that reason, Madam Speaker, I strongly urge members to vote for this. This is essentially a compromise amendment. This isn't going as far as many of us would like to go, but it goes a portion of the way.
Representative Elton.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, Majority Leader, when he spoke to this amendment, said, and I hate to paraphrase, but I'm going to have to because I couldn't get it down quickly enough, but essentially said this takes us, if we adopt this amendment, it takes us back to the original problem. Well, Madam Speaker, I guess for me, I need to know what the original problem was, how the original problem manifested itself, and what this does to fix it. I guess I'd only add, Madam Speaker, that adopting this amendment doesn't mandate that a jury award $500,000. I mean, it doesn't mandate that a jury award $150,000. I mean, all this does is give the jury a little bit more discretion in deciding with the fact situation they're presented with what is necessary to rectify that fact situation.
Representative Roperg.
Madam Speaker, I just wanted to ask the maker of the amendment whether disfigurement included loss of hair.